AI is everywhere. The environment has collapsed and is now controlled by habitable biodomes. And the population lives under the strict rule of a faceless state. And we want a baby, gosh darn it. That's right, we're doing the assessment, buddy. Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast.
The assessment. It's set in the not-too-distant dystopian future.
Is it?
But before, let's ask the important question. How's your not-too-distant dystopian present, bud?
I'm really hot, and I don't mean that as a kind of self-flattery thing.
Toot that
horn. So, yeah, otherwise, mate, all good. How about yourself?
I think my lung went weird because it felt like an elastic band snapped in my chest yesterday.
What I'm saying is that that's the sickness leaving you.
That's what I'm
going
to lean
crystal
into that
witch.
As well.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean into that. That was the curse being lifted.
But between now and next episode, you got an appointment, right?
Yes.
I cannot wait to hear all about how they listened. Yeah. And then booked you another one for 6 months from now.
Yeah, like the last time where they were like, we need to get you in for scans immediately. And then ghosted me for 3 months.
Or like the one before.
Two months before that. Yeah. So anyway, I'm doing all right, mate. But let's start the show a little bit.
We're talking how this has to be a contender for the greatest directorial debut of all time.
All right.
We'll see.
Yeah, okay, fair. Does this film have one of the best performances of the year so far?
No, it's got three. What does the blue pole mean?
The real life parallels between director Fleur Fortune and her film whilst working on The Assessment.
That's not her please tell me that's not her real name. We'll get into that. And most importantly, what does The Assessment really mean?
What's it really mean? I've got something good for this. I've got a fun theory for what it really means, buddy.
Okay.
It's going to tie us into one of your other favourite films. Did you hear my voice turn into gravel for a second there?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
That's a bit of lung.
That's a bit of lung. Yeah. That's the lackey band trying to get out. Do you know what I mean?
So this is the point of the show where we break down. We have a kind of plot breakdown before the inevitable emotional breakdown.
Yeah.
So if you've not seen this film yet, Ben and I, we always say this, and some listeners, they just don't like watching films. They just like listening to the podcast. So those guys stick around.
Yeah.
If you are a person that likes watching films, I'm not going to spoil the ending of this podcast episode for you by telling you what Ben and I think about it.
Right, yeah. But save that for ratings.
But what I will do is spoil the ending of this movie.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? So, like, stick around if you've seen the film and you want to know what happens.
Yeah.
Stick around if you've got no intention of seeing the film and you don't care.
Yeah.
But if you're one of those people that really wants to see this, and I recommend this film to all of you.
Me too. Go watch it.
Maybe go watch it now because we're about to break down what happens in the movie.
I've written the breakdown this week.
Right.
I've tried to keep it spoiler free, but it's fucking impossible. So I've kept the ending off.
Okay.
Because I figure we're going to spoil it later in the episode.
Right. But by that point, we're half an hour in and
exactly.
That's really on you.
There
right?
you go. That's
maybe
your fault.
You've missed the first spoiler warning. Maybe you think it'll be fine. Maybe you think us telling you exactly what's about to happen in this film, we don't really mean it.
Yeah.
So by about half an hour in, you'll really know that we do, and that's where the ending happens.
I've planned for those people.
I like that.
Thank you.
I like this. It's a nightmare doing this.
Yeah, it's awful. you start this one.
In a near future world ravaged by environmental collapse and strict population control, scientists Mia, played by Elizabeth Olsen, and Aryan, played by Himesh Patel, are eager to become parents. They're handed a 7-day state-mandated assessment by a government assessor, Virginia, played by Alicia Vikander, who we saw recently in Ex Machina.
Yeah.
She moves into their centralized dome home, modeled straight from a Brutalist Jetsons episode. Brutalist Jetsons episode.
Sums it up, doesn't it?
Really does.
Sums it up.
All right, Captain Eloquence.
Thank you.
What begins as a formal evaluation quickly turns unnerving as Virginia performs childlike role plays and tantrums while she questions and probes every aspect of their relationship and values.
Unsettling as fuck, though, isn't it?
It's a little bit like she has all the unreasonableness of a toddler,
yeah,
but all of the unreasonableness of a government.
All the unreasonable authority of a government.
Yeah.
It's insane. Virginia's tests escalate. She orchestrates a tense dinner party with friends and colleagues and weird ex-flings.
Yeah.
To scrutinize the couple in a social setting. Then manipulates Mia emotionally with a false medical emergency involving her sister and forces herself on Aryan.
It's a complicated scene. We'll talk about
it. I'm calling it the incident.
The incident.
She forces herself and Aryan into the incident.
Yes.
under threat of failing the assessment. I have spelt failing wrong there, but yeah, I corrected it. IRL.
IRL.
There you go. That's live editing. That. After shifting the dynamic of the couple's lives, she destroys Mia's greenhouse and with it her entire life's work, pushing the couple to react under crisis. Each scenario that she puts these guys through dives deeper into the couple's psyche, blurring the line between genuine behavioural study and state torture porn.
And personal vendetta, because you never know if anything she's doing is what she's supposed to be doing.
You don't know whether it's the toddler or Virginia. It's a fucking nightmare.
So despite surviving the state-sanctioned torture week, losing almost everything in the process, Mia and Arian learn that they failed the assessment.
Wah, wah.
It's a crushing moment. Fucking wah, wah. A crushing moment compounded when Arian admits to the incident of sleeping with Virginia to his wife, Mia. He then constructs a digital baby stimulation. He then constructs a baby simulation to reconcile it, but Mia dashes it on the floor, rejecting it as artificial and hollow. She confronts Virginia, the assessor, having tracked her down at her home, and uncovers the truth that Virginia's own child died, and the system fails hundreds of hopeful parents by design. Yeah. Ultimately, no new people are getting born. They've got this weird pill they all take that makes them age really slowly. There's just not space in the dome.
No.
But they need the hope, so they let everyone keep testing, and everyone's found to fail for some reason or another.
It'd be damaging to morale if they just said no one is reproducing anymore.
Yeah.
Which is fucking horrendous.
Isn't it?
That's not even the end of the film, mate.
That's not the end of the film.
We're going to get into that later.
Yeah.
But you've had the plot spoiled. I haven't given you the ending. Go and fucking watch the film.
Right.
And then immediately come back because I do want the attention.
So I'm not going to spoil the ending of the episode either, but this is one of my favourite films of the year.
Yeah, which is amazing because I threw it at you out of pure, I need something to match.
Right. So we're having this whole conversation about we're doing Garland. Garland seems to be doing quite well. People seem to be enjoying that.
But let's not
throw
balance.
In something too out of the ordinary, right?
Yeah, of course.
And that was a nightmare to find.
Right, Garland is the most difficult director to find complementary works to because he's so fucking good at what he does. It's kind of incomparable in places.
And then it's the impossible task of find a film enough people have seen to be interested in, but not so many people have seen that we get lost in the murk.
Do you know what I mean?
That's really well-written mid-budget sci-fi and it's like...
it's mad. So anyway, the assessment... came out in 2025.
And is so very nearly Ex Machina.
Right.
While saying something completely different.
Right.
As well, with as much depth.
Yeah.
But is more relatable to me than AI, which I'm like, yeah, okay.
Right.
This is like, no, this applies to everyone now.
Exactly. It's so fucking human and so based in reality. It's literally like...
What I love about it is it's a really rare example of a genre I love, which is mundane sci-fi.
Yeah.
I could be uncharitable and say it's the criticism I would have given Neil Blomkamp's movie about with the fucking halo.
Elysium.
Love Elysium. Love the world.
Yeah.
Then he goes on to save it and I'm like, don't care now.
Yeah.
Because it's Fast and the Furious. I was happy. I was happy where we were, right?
Sure.
Guy goes to work, lives in the world. Yeah. Show me this.
Yeah, yeah.
What this does is no one saves the world here, right?
Fast and the Furious. Yeah. It's so offensive. And then I remembered that he did Gran Turismo. So I'm like,
right.
It's perfect.
He did Air. Okay. This is where Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are now. There are very few that do it. Gattaca does it well.
Gattaca's a great shout.
Gattaca, Black Mirror, some episodes.
Yeah.
Moon. Sort of, but even then he exposes a wild worldwide corporate conspiracy.
Yeah.
But it's just, here's an incredible sci-fi world,
and we're
showing you none of it. We're just showing what you would see.
Yeah, a very mundane, boring, day-to-day, go through the motions of
how you're getting
of an employee.
Salad now.
Yeah. Dude, Moon's a great shout too.
Great film.
I watched this on just sort of like a whim. As again, I was hunting for a film that would sort of, would be not comparable to Alex Garland, but in a similar setting.
Yeah.
And I watched this and I was like, okay, it's pretty fucking heavy. And it's
just a bit.
It's quite like impactful. But also, it might be Rob's perfect genre.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's sci-fi drama, but it's also kind of brutally realistic.
Yeah.
It's not that too far removed from our universe. It's not that too far into a distant future, but it's not unimaginable. And it kind of bled into my whole, you know, my whole shtick, like humans are cancer, we're killing the world, this is going to happen, blah, blah, blah. It fed right into that and it piqued my interest the second I saw the biodome. I was like, okay. And this whole story unravels with these, it's essentially three actors that it's centered around. And every single person, I can't describe how, but every single person is so fleshed out that I had such an immediate bond with them.
Yeah.
That only really happens with series nowadays, because obviously series,
you get
way more time to bond with these characters. From the get-go, I felt like I was welcomed into the relationship. It was like I was part of the furniture in the home, just a fly on the wall. I don't get that with many films.
Movies are really struggling to compete with television.
Yeah.
Where they've got 10 hours to tell a story.
Yeah,
quite
definitely.
Often more budget.
Yeah.
And they're telling a longer, more in-depth story where they can go, here's just an hour getting to know these people.
Mm.
It's a really off-key, non-sci-fi reference, but the German movie Das Boot.
Oh, yeah.
It's 5 hours long because they were like, well, it's a 5-hour movie, and they cut it into... But I wouldn't give a shit about half the stuff that happens in that film if I watched it in a 90 minute. I'd just go, it's some Nazis on a boat.
100%. 100%. You need the 5 hours.
Right. You need the 5 hours to go, that's Hummel.
Yeah.
And he's actually quite mint.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really know why he's on the boat. It's just a job.
This is it, man. He said, das is it. Fuck my life. This is going to be a scatty episode. I'm on like 2 hours sleep and I'm fucked. But everything that we're saying, this is why I think it needs to be contender for greatest directorial debut of all time. Like, it has to be.
It's certainly of the last 10 years, it's in the top five.
Okay.
It's only because I can't look at every film.
Yeah. No,
and do a ranking.
Right.
But top of my head, I feel comfortable that even if I did,
yeah,
films of the last 10 years, this would be in the top five.
Yeah, easy. The performances in this film alone set it apart from the rest, right? I've got like a little thing here. Essentially what I've done is I've gone into the three performances that have literally knocked my whole socks off.
Yeah.
All two socks clean off my feet. My grippers are out, all right?
Yeah. No, they're not. You hate feet.
I know. I regret saying that. Himesh Patel.
Himesh Patel's incredible in this.
Insane. He plays the awkward genius with like a weird, quick-witted, funny side, but it's only available to those that he sees as part of his inner circle.
Yeah, he doesn't fall into the trap. And it's an unfair comparison because Oscar Isaacs is intentionally playing a troubled genius in Ex Machina.
Yes.
What this does is it provides both perspectives.
Definitely.
You see his slightly too driven, slightly too ambitious, slightly removed from the world side.
Exactly.
But you also see the side where he is a human being and connected to people.
It's very soft and awkward and loving and weird.
Right. You never see Oscar Isaacs' character in Ex Machina with his mum.
You don't.
But I imagine he's not that guy with his mum.
Exactly. Right? His entire persona is sort of littered with these little subtle nods to how he's feeling in the moment and how he's feeling to those people around him. And I know it sounds like a basic thing to do because we're all human. It happens like day-to-day life. But to see it and recognize it and be a part of it within a film in such a short space of time is insane.
It's devoting the runtime and trusting in your audience that they're going to need this later on and not switch off.
Exactly. So you've got these little moments. Like the first moment where he starts dropping humor is where him and Mia are getting intimate and he just cracks some stupid, shitty... She takes off his boxes and he's like, are you going to fold those? that's a goofy thing to say in the moment, right?
But this is the sort of thing we would.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
1,000%. Like, that's what would happen. And then obviously Virginia intervenes. That it's the first time that he shows any sort of comedic lightness towards Virginia is when she's acting like a toddler and she throws food at Mia and he can't help himself but go, that's kind of funny.
But what's fantastic about even that little moment the assessor has come in and is essentially doing all the things that kids do, like trying to drive the parents apart, trying to pick a favorite, trying to be unreasonable. And she correctly identifies that Elizabeth Olsen's character, Mia, wants to be a loved mum.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And so he's like, well, how will you react if you're not?
Yeah.
So by throwing the food at her, you get the triple reaction in one scene.
Exactly.
The assessor's testing boundaries.
Yeah.
You get to see Ian's reaction to that.
Yeah.
And you get to see the offense that not only the assessor doing that to her causes Mia.
Yeah.
But him joining in.
Oh, 1,000%.
So you get a proper three-way communication with one flick of food.
That three-way communication is important as well, because that's the first moment that he truly warms to Virginia.
Yeah.
It's the first time he cracks a smile and he's a little bit sort of like goofy with
and
it.
And it's not like Mia doesn't notice that.
She does wholeheartedly. Yeah, yeah. But then you look at the contrast after the incident and how he handles Virginia when she's back to being the toddler. And it's, do you want to go play outside? And he is so far removed and cold and stern, but you can see the mask sort of.
And you can see why.
Oh, 1,000%.
Is now a time to mention the, because it's going to come up a number of times.
It will. Can we bring it up shortly?
Shortly.
Because it's its own thing. If we get into it, it's a whole thing and it's pretty fucking intense.
It's so intense.
It's weird. So after the incident, you can almost see the mask being put on when the interaction's there, but it's not for anyone because there's only those two in the room.
Yeah.
His performance in this, mate, it literally, the more I watch it, the more I'm like, how are you a person? How are you a person just out there doing your shopping and your laundry and shit?
It's a good combination of a good director and a good performer. Insane. The director's getting the most out of the performer and the performer's then doing more because they know they're in safe hands.
Exactly.
The editor's got them. They can do what they need to do.
Yeah. I think it's great casting. And Fleur Fortune says, with Aryan, Himesh Patel's character, it was not easy to find the right actor because I didn't want him to be the bad guy, which is really important for the whole dynamic of the movie. He's a genius, so I wanted him to be a geek, but sometimes he's funny, brings a lot of humor in the way that he has that censoring voice, which is very natural to him. Because he's very smart, you totally believe that he could be this genius who is not able to behave and live in the normal world, so he lives in one that gives him protection. I think Aryan is often uncomfortable, and I knew that Himesh could bring that out in the character. Fuck me, did she nail that on the head?
Yeah, she really did. She
knocked out, clean out the park.
He's nailed it.
Yeah, Himesh Patel's nailed it.
Elizabeth Olsen nails it as well.
The most human character in this film
is
Elizabeth Olsen, and the most relatable character by a long shot, Elizabeth Olsen. She has these flaws that she's aware of, that she doesn't hide behind, she doesn't hide away from. She openly admits them and deals with them in the moment, and it's almost like it's a weirdly therapeutic thing to see. Someone so relatable have a flaw where she's getting jealous.
Yeah.
And Aryan is playfully being like, oh, are you jealous that Virginia likes me? And she's like, embarrassingly, I am. It's super fucking embarrassing.
All of this is undercut by the fact that this isn't a child.
No.
This is a grown woman.
It's a grown woman.
Who is pretending to be a child.
Yeah.
And because they intuit and assume that that's part of the assessment. It's never stated that it is.
It's never said.
They then go, okay, well, she's judging how we parent her.
Yes.
And so they feel kind of coerced into a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's ever stated.
No.
They're never told any of this. They just slowly kind of convince themselves that this is what they have to do in reaction to what the assessor is doing.
Which paints this whole picture of like, if this is part of the assessment, they're adapting incredibly quickly to a situation that has arisen that they're not in control of, that they have no clue of the rules of.
Right. It paints a great picture of them as parents.
Exactly.
But one of the things that I really struggled with is, and you're meant to, or I hope you're meant to, at the start of the movie, I'm like, set some boundaries.
Yeah.
Because it would be just as good a demonstration of parenting to go, you're being a mental, you're going to stop.
This
guest room is fine for you.
Yeah.
You're not having our bed.
Yeah.
And you'll behave like a grown woman when you're in our house.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. They let her set all the rules.
Yep.
They let her set all the boundaries. And then they have to continue the film under the rules that have kind of just been bullied onto them.
Well, this plays into one of the main themes of the unchecked power and the total control and all of this business, because they have no clue of the boundaries or what they're being assessed on. This person of authority who's been state sanctioned to live with them for a week and judge them on every single aspect of their personal lives, they just have to go along with it.
Yeah.
And it's a real nice sort of slice of, what the fuck do you do when you have no clue who it is that you're answering to? You have no clue of the question that you're answering. You just have to be.
It's where the film moves from the familial and the parental into the social. You have an objectively described totalitarian government that are demonstrating population control.
Yeah.
And it's the one-to-one parallel of, you don't know where this authority comes from. You didn't necessarily choose this authority.
No. Nope.
You just find yourself under it.
Yeah.
And you don't know, it's faceless. You just have to do it.
Just have to be.
And that theme gets picked up again and again and again. And look, Elizabeth Olsen in this movie is such a fantastic audience surrogate with mm-hmm. that starting skeptical, starting going, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then eventually, as you begin to stop seeing Alicia Vikander as an adult,
yeah,
so does she. It's so brilliantly done.
Dude, so she is almost the polar opposite of Virginia for the first act of the movie, right? She's the most warm human person that exists. Virginia is this cold, horrifyingly scary woman.
Yeah.
That is, for some reason, I may have questions that I need to look into later on a personal level, found her the most attractive person on the planet and was like, uh-oh.
It's the mean streak in the danger.
It was something.
Yeah.
It was something. So Fleur says about Elizabeth Olsen, she calls her Lizzie. I had Lizzie in mind from the beginning. I've been a big fan of her since I saw her in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Yeah,
I've not seen it. I needed her character to be the most wild, human, and artful, and she has such a connection with those aspects in a very natural way, a very elegant way. She never pushes too far with the emotion. She's always in a very precise way. I think she managed to create a connection with the audience so that they feel that they are in the place of this couple. I needed someone who could make that connection because Virginia, Alicia's character, is so crazy and so weird that it can take you out of the story a little bit. So I needed whoever played Mia to be the exact opposite of that. Keep the audience invested.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I was reading this interview with Fleur and I'm checking my notes because my notes are right. Virginia did take me out of the story a little bit because I was like, this isn't a person. This isn't how humans work.
Right.
But then, as you just correctly said, the second you stop seeing her as a person and you start seeing her as a child.
Yep.
I've lost all of that.
People.
It's just gone. Well, not until you're 18.
I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Grow up. Be an adult. Just grow up.
Yeah.
And then we're on to Alicia Vikander, which in my eyes is the performance of the year by a long shot. It's my favorite performance of the year. Alicia Vikander doesn't just play Virginia.
No.
She also plays Grace. And she also plays the toddler.
Yeah.
She takes on three roles.
Yep.
Who all have wildly different personalities.
Yep.
And are still somehow the most fleshed out all three characters could be,
yeah,
and presented in such a way where I feel like I know all of them individually, and it's not just Alicia Vikander doing faces.
Yeah, 100%. She has a rare opportunity in this film, which I think a lot of actors only get in something more artsy like a David Lynch film,
sure,
where they're cast in a film, but they're playing different roles.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of used to seeing an actor be the same person for the runtime of a film.
Yeah.
And it's really obvious when you think about, like, well, okay, yeah, they're this person in that film and this person in that film. But because they're separate films, you get to kind of separate it.
100%.
When you see an actor do that all in one film, it really pulls into sharp focus. Like, fuck me, they're really different.
They are real fucking different.
Right.
The example you just gave, two separate movies. Like, okay, so Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina and Alicia Vikander in The Assessment. I can separate that.
Yeah.
Because it's two different universes.
Different names above the door.
Different worlds. Right. You know what I mean? Different rules.
Mm-hmm.
Different rules.
And you're like, well, she had a year, you know, so she had time to change.
Exactly.
You see the same face be different people in the same film.
Yeah.
The only other one I can think of off the top of my head is Lost Highway, the David Lynch movie.
Okay.
Where halfway through the film, everyone switches who they're playing.
Yeah, that's terrifying, to be fair. Okay. That's a great shout.
But it's a really good demonstration. So I think it's, again, the script is perfectly placed to give her that best performance. Where else do you get the opportunity to play three different people in one film? Let us know in the comments.
Yeah, but she does this in such a fucking... It's a Herculean task.
Nailed it.
That she pulls off. Thanks.
No, you genuinely stuck the landing on that one.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you which way I was going to go, but it's fine. I tripped myself up. She does this to such a stellar degree, it's insane. I've broken this down into like three little notes that I've made, right? Playing Virginia.
Yeah.
She is this fucking horrendously strict, stern, by the book, government employee.
Mm-hmm.
The rules of the state are the rules that I live by, and that is that, and this is how it is.
Yeah.
There is no room for debate. There's no room for error, right?
Toddler's the opposite. No fucking rules.
This fuck all.
Right?
But so she has this sort of like, her whole goal is to make sure that everyone is so unworthy that they just accept their fate of never passing the assessment, right?
Yeah, she has to justify what their eventual fail, right?
Exactly. So she'll like debase herself on a molecular level to go, this is why you're terrible people and I would never give you a child.
Yeah.
And she has to sell it to those people whose lives she's just ruined.
Yeah.
And she does this time and time and time again. For years she's been doing this.
Yeah.
And then we get Grace. fucking Grace.
The real persona.
Oh, God.
You know, who she is behind the performance.
The real person behind Virginia. Virginia is an act that she plays. It's a facade that she puts on for her job. She can't use a real name. She has to keep a distance. Grace is the person behind that, right? So Grace is a heartbroken mother who is literally bending over backwards to ignore her own humanity.
Yeah.
She is ignoring everything that every part of it that makes her a human.
What works about Grace as a character for me is, you know, Mia confronts her and is like, well, why did we fail?
Yeah.
When we get to the speak of the incident, I'll be like, I don't think there was much mystery.
Yeah.
She's like, but why did we fail? You know, why did you go as far as you did? And she explains that she lost her child.
Yeah.
And that she's now taken this job in the hopes that they'll let her have another one. And you just think, what it actually is that you can't have a child.
Yeah.
So you motivate yourself by making sure no one can. Because it's almost revenge against the universe.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed one, so I'm going to make sure you're not allowed one either.
Yeah.
And again, it pulls back to that social parallel where anybody who's under a system of oppression,
right,
they're all victims, even if you're the one with the stick.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you have to exist in this world. You have a choice. Hold the stick or be under the stick.
Yeah.
And she's made that choice. Well, I'm going to hold the stick. But it's such a wonderful depiction of, like, anytime there's an argument or a dispute socially.
Yeah.
People on both sides do horrible shit, usually because they feel they're getting justice for the horrible shit done to them. And it goes on and on and on and on.
Like a sort of like cathartic vindication type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
this happened to me.
Yeah.
And therefore, why does it matter if I do it to you?
Yeah. It happened to me. Therefore, it should happen to everyone else.
Right.
If this is a normal thing for me, it's a normal thing for everyone.
Right.
Fuck you all.
And a wonderful way of doing it. It's a fucking crystal Rubik's cube of perfect moments like that.
Yeah.
That Grace perfectly encapsulates.
Yeah. She's got a blind trust in a faceless entity.
Yeah.
Is going to fulfill a promise to her whilst systematically lying to everyone else under the societal rules.
Yeah.
And there's such a contradiction there, and it's so desperately heartbreaking to watch the truth come out of Grace's mouth because she knows it. Deep down, she knows it.
Yeah.
But to watch it unfold.
To realize that and live with that realization.
But even Mia is like, don't do it and come with me to go and live in the old world and we'll go together. And I'm like, you are such a fucking human, because that's what I said.
Yeah.
I said this out loud.
She's
and
a mum.
And then Mia said it. And
she's
I'm like,
a mother. Oh. That's the thing. She is a perfect mother.
She's fucking killing it. And the thing, the thing that fucks me over the most, more than anything, is that Grace is behind Virginia, right? But Virginia is behind the toddler.
Yeah.
The toddler takes on its own fucking role, right? She's this fucking, it's a weird but crazily accurate display of what it would be like if an adult did what toddlers do. And it's weird as fuck.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it.
100%.
It's horrid.
It's spot on.
Yeah, but it's perfect.
And this is where I think, you know, people always sort of lionize and idolize parenthood, but so much of what children do is horrid.
Yeah.
Because they're learning what horrid is or isn't.
Yeah.
Right?
But there's also a real sinister edge to all of this, because it's really fucking unsettling to watch someone her age project this sort of like gleeful innocence, this pure childlike wonder.
Yeah.
This genuine curiosity, even when she's alone. She doesn't have to keep up this facade, but she does, and that makes it a bit more sinister for me.
Really, really, really does.
We all lose this curiosity in adulthood, but we all know who Virginia is. And watching it play out, I'm like, oh no,
right.
No, stop it.
Right.
Also, I need to point out in my notes, I've not written Virginia, I've written vagina. and it's like the sixth time I've read it, and I'm trying not to make myself laugh. But I've written it like a hillbilly being like, vagina.
On that note, should we discuss the incident?
Now's a good time for the incident. Now's a good time for the incident.
The incident is when Mia receives a call telling her that her sister's in hospital. She has to go.
Yeah.
The assessor makes a big deal about her not being allowed to go.
Yeah.
And eventually, after Mia really fighting her case, gives her like 6 hours.
Yeah, you've got till 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And then be back, otherwise this will be terminated. Yeah.
And then she goes back to being a fucking toddler. It's creepy. Later that night, Iron's in bed. Who comes knocking but Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
Could be Virginia, could be the toddler.
Yep.
We don't know.
Nope.
And then starts a sexual
encounter
incident with him.
Yeah.
Which is at the same time for one scene, they don't cut.
They do not.
She's very forceful. She's very commanding. Mm-hmm. She makes it clear that the couple will fail the assessment.
Yep.
Well, she heavily implies that the couple will fail the assessment.
She all but says it out loud.
But doesn't say it out loud.
She does not.
And you watch what is simultaneously a male rape, child abuse, and adultery, and oppression by the state all happen at the same time.
Yep.
And it's horrifying. And I couldn't watch, but I couldn't not watch.
Yep.
And it is such a combination of things to put together.
Yes.
It's an uphead. It's watching something horrible backwards.
Yes.
I mean, he forgets the first rule of making anything, like whether it's a sandwich or a baby.
Yep.
Don't fuck the end product.
And considering he's a scientist who does nothing but make virtual pets.
Right.
It should be rule number one.
Rule number one.
It should be rule
don't
number one.
Don't fuck what you're making.
Don't fuck the digital chimp.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. There we go.
Yeah.
There's a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Where I struggled was like after that scene, I was like, well, they failed because he's fucked a child.
Yeah, 100%.
But then I'm like, but he also didn't fuck a child because that's a grown woman.
Yes.
But the test was that that's a child, so treat it like a child, and you fucked it.
So welcome to Arian's head state right now.
Right.
And this is what he's thinking whilst trying to be a normal fucking person to not tell his wife that he's just cheated on her with an adult baby.
But under the belief, well, under the debatable belief that he, but
he was doing it for got the a intent, greater good.
But he claims the intent after the fact.
Sure.
So it's like, did he, didn't he?
I
was he like, whoa, this, I'm not angry at this. Because I'm seeing a grown woman.
Yeah.
Right? I can allow myself to see this person as a grown woman right now.
Sure.
And therefore, that makes it fine.
Yeah.
I could also choose to see her as a child and that would not make it fine. But that would make what's happening horrible because I'm being raped. So I'm just going to do the thing that makes it okay.
Right.
It's a fucking pretzel of horror.
It's just, you know those hydraulic press videos that you see on social media? I was in one of those for this entire scene.
Yeah.
And it was just, the heaviness was not letting up.
Yeah.
It was just going.
Yeah.
It just kept going.
And then, I mean, that's why he, in the end, he creates a digital baby.
Yeah.
Which Mia then drops because she forgets, well, she remembers the first rule of making anything, which is whether it's a sandwich or a baby.
Don't fuck it.
No. Once it hits the floor, it's best to walk away.
Ah, yeah, fair.
If you drop
it. That makes sense, yeah. Parenting 101.
Right, you know there we go.
That's it. All of this going on, all of the incident that's happened, and they have to carry on like normal. They find out they've failed, X, Y, and Z. It then moves on to the ending, which we haven't spoiled, but we're about to. Because I feel like the ending, I know the ending was left purposefully open-ended, right?
Right.
It was open to interpretation. Whatever you think about it, you forced to kind of draw your own conclusions. And it's one of these interesting things where there's so many different ideas floating around that are all so convincing that you kind of have to assume that every single person that has ever thought of what this could mean is exactly right.
It's
for what you're thinking.
It's a little bit like looking at every image on the internet, but zoomed out.
Yeah.
Like it's all there.
Yeah.
But I don't have the energy right now to go through because there's so many ways you could read this film that would be correct.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I'm speechless when thinking about a film.
Okay.
And it's very... My favorite films are the ones that I watch once and think about for a week.
Yeah.
And that's what I've done with this one.
100%.
There's so much there.
So,
it's so deep.
The ending, I'm just going to spoil it outright. Virginia moves on to assess another couple. She's shown to a bedroom with a balcony. The camera cuts away. And when it cuts back, Virginia has jumped off the balcony to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
She's now dead, like four stories down. Now, this brought up questions. I know you've got questions.
Well, so it's just a question of, do we think she's just so committed to the bit that she sees an open window and a balcony, switches into toddler mode and goes, this is what a toddler would do and is willing to do it.
That's a good takeaway.
I'm not sure. I'm wondering if now that the truth has been outed by Mia, that, okay, well, you're never going to get your child. She's like, why do I do this?
Yeah.
Or maybe she just wanted to demonstrate the rule of making anything, be it sandwiches or people.
Right.
They got meat in them.
There you go. So the question is, who do you think killed themselves? Was it the toddler for committing to the bit?
Oh, God.
Was it Virginia because she is now realizing that everything that she's doing is a pure facade and she's done debasing herself?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Grace, the heartbroken mother, that now realizes the state that is paying her to lie to people is also lying to her?
I mean, yes.
Yes,
is the
correct answer.
I think we overuse it, but yes.
Yes.
Right?
No, you're entirely right. So my first watch through, I was convinced it was Virginia, and I was like, yeah. Okay, so she's sort of come to terms with everything. She can't carry on doing what she's doing. After the conversation with Mia, she's sort of regained some sort of humanity.
Yeah.
And then my second watch through, I was like, but was it Grace?
It's good.
But was it Grace?
Here's the thing. It's going to be one of those films that every time I rewatch it for the rest of my life,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get something new out of it.
Yeah.
This is a forever film for me.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I'll watch it. I'll probably add it to my annual rotation.
Yeah.
I'll stick it on. I'll have a horrible time that I deeply love.
Yeah, yeah.
And just go, that's a new film.
Yeah.
That's a new film.
Yeah.
That's a new film.
100%.
Every time. Because you're right. It is all three.
Yeah.
For different and conflicting and harmonious reasons that all weave together into a lovely little cloth.
It's outstanding. It's an unreal piece of cinema that needs to be appreciated. And I've seen some people talk about it online, but I haven't seen enough people talk about it.
Nowhere near enough.
I feel like everyone needs to get on it as soon as possible. I was trying to find the answer for this on the ending being explained, and there's a lot of like emotions involved and everyone had different opinions. So I kind of think it's an open interpretation. For me personally, I don't think it's committing to the bit for the toddler because she hasn't expressed what the assessment is or how it's going to unfold. Because if we go back to day one of the assessment for Mia and Aryan is like where the toddler comes out, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a bit jumping the gun and she's too professional to jump the gun. Do you know what I mean? She's
Maybe.
Not too professional to jump the balcony.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah. So I for me, it's not the toddler. I teeter between Virginia and the Grace every now and then. It depends on where I am in my head and how emotional I'm feeling.
I think realistically, there are very few times that all three of those personas are going to agree on anything.
No, they're not. They're and all if, massive contradictions.
They're all
with
massive
each other.
Contradictions. But for that one moment, all three of them point the same direction.
Did
all
you just turn into a fucking Discord mod?
Yeah. All three of them point the same direction and it's out the fucking window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Literally.
Literally out the fucking window.
So I was looking online to try and figure this out. I was looking at like anything that I could find from Fleur Fontaine.
Who is Fleur Fontaine? Like, what is this person that's destroyed my dreams and built them anew?
This is her first ever feature.
Fuck off.
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping this isn't Arcade Fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Let's
great first album, shocking second album.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Or M. Night.
Oh, God. Let's not. Oh, he's gone full turn. He's back on top. Anyway. Fleur Fortune is a director of music videos, short films. She's known for doing like really fucking outlandish music videos. She did the Travis Scott one that's like 8 minutes long.
Right, okay.
I've never seen any of the music videos because it's not my cup of tea in the slightest. I had one on mute and it looked incredible. Like,
right,
quite futuristic, quite cool. She got given this script. So this script is written by Mrs. and Mr. Thomas. This is their first time writing a feature script.
Right.
They action the script by entering a competition.
What?
So you know those things you see online where it's like, enter now to get your film funded.
They're not real, though.
They
are
won
they?
One.
One must have been real.
This is what I mean. And I checked the website and I was like, no, it's got to be like a fraud thing. This is a marketing thing. It's a competition website. And it's like the assessor has won. It's been picked up by a couple of producers. Fleur Fortune's going to direct and Elizabeth Olsen signed on to star. Anyway, 2016 they won this. So 5 years in development this film was. Script won a contest, got picked up. 5 years later, Fleur has worked her ass off to get the script going to where it is now, right? So it was a very different story when it started off.
Right, okay. Yeah,
when it started off, it was quite Minority Report. They had like computer screens and everything was like big and electronic and all this, that and the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And what she wanted to do is she wanted to make the world believable.
Right.
The whole universe had to abide by its own laws. So in an environmental disaster, there's no more forests in this world. Trees are gone, plants are gone. The only plants that exist are in Mia's greenhouse.
Yep.
Which is why, when you watch the film, there is no wood anywhere in that house.
Of course.
Everything is concrete. Everything is plastic.
Everything's steel. Yeah,
Everything's cloth. There is no wood anywhere.
Little things that I just didn't notice.
There's so much.
But would have if they were wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? But they did it right first time through. So this script gets picked up. Fleur signs on. Now, when Fleur was working on this film, she was living something not too dissimilar from the assessment. Her and her husband were trying to...
a grown adult who was being a toddler?
Yeah.
Okay.
Her and her husband were trying to get pregnant. They were trying to become parents. They were having difficulties. They were going through IVF treatment. They had to go through like backup plans. So they were going through adoption assessments and all this business. Her experience with all of this is when they're doing tests for fertility and everything like this, the woman is tested for a fucking long time before they even look at the husband.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So you have this whole... Fleur's jumping through every hoop thrown at her by the societal structures of like, you must do this in order for us to help you have a baby. Kind of reminiscent of the assessment, right? And then the super invasive questions and vetting that adoption services will put you through.
It works both ways, man. So when I've known many women. I've known many women.
At least 11. I've seen you talk to at least 11.
I mean, biblically, I'm talking biblically known many women, right?
Okay.
And I've got nothing left.
Okay.
Just an over-sharpened pencil now.
Yeah.
every single time, if I've biblically known a woman who doesn't want kids, they're like, I cannot get my tubes tied for love nor money because the doctor says, we will not do it because we can't get the consent of a potential future husband.
Wow.
That whole sense of like, well, are you sure?
Yeah.
It takes years as a woman to sterilize yourself.
Right.
I literally kicked in my GP's door and went, take him out.
Right.
And they went, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Because apparently I can be trusted to not want kids.
Right.
But if a woman wants the exact same thing, they're like, oh, but really?
It's kind of fucked,
isn't
it? Yeah. So this whole thing, like struggling to conceive, IVF, having to go through these tests, years of invasive screening for adoptions, all this stuff. She did eventually conceive naturally, which is, you know.
Congrats. Clap, clap, clap.
Great. She has said in an interview how they don't test her husband for at least a year while she's jumping through every hoop thrown
at her. Ridiculous.
But this is a really interesting thing here. So her life and what she was living through, I feel like it's influenced how Virginia treats Aryan and Mia.
Right.
So early on in the film, the power dynamic is she'll laugh at Aryan's dumb jokes.
Yeah.
And she'll be quite sort of like receptive to anything that he's saying or ideas that he's putting forward.
Yeah.
He's the only one that can feed her. He's the only one that she wants to play hide and seek with at the beach. Yeah. They leave Mia hidden behind a rock for like three rounds. And it's brutal. I know it's like a childish thing, but at the same time, I was like,
That stuff hurts.
Kick them both.
That stuff hurts.
Yeah. So all this going on, I feel like the power dynamics are represented in the film real fucking close to the bone for what she was going through in real life. And the fact that this is her debut and she was able to go, I like the script. I'm going to change it so that the world is a little bit more my speed. We're going to lose Minority Report stuff.
All for the better.
We're going to take it so that it's brutalist. It's 1970s futuristic because the world's ended. We need something to look forward to, something to sort of project forward. You know what I mean? You look at all the predictions from like 1969 and they're like, by 1990, we'll have flying cars. It's that kind of futuristic thing that we all know and love. Because it feels retro to us.
It's retro futurism at this point, isn't it? I mean, I do sympathize with sci-fi of the 50s when you consider that if you're jobbing about in the 50s, you were probably born in, let's say, 1910.
Sure.
Look at the amount of progress. You grew up on a farm and a horse was how you got about.
Yeah.
And now there's a cunt on the moon.
Yeah, fair.
Right? Fair. And you're like, oh, if I just push this forward another 50 years, we'll be trans-dimensional space ghosts.
Yeah.
And then it's actually like, actually, we're going to run out of space and resources and money and what we're actually going to have is an orange man and Elon Musk.
And everyone, instead of being trans-dimensional ghosts, everyone's kind of scared of trans.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Everyone, Ben.
Huh?
Everyone, including you.
Look on the internet, mate. Including me? Not including me. Well,
not everyone, then.
Not at all.
Don't paint me with that
brush. I'm a trans-dimensional ghost.
It's true. you're a trans-dimensional ghost. You are indeed.
Thank you very much, babe. I got a question for you.
Mm.
One of the tests is to set up that fucking horrible playhouse.
Yeah.
It's like an IKEA thing. And I know the reason that it's in the film, because it's designed to test couples. And if you want to test your relationship, go to IKEA. Buy fucking anything and try and put it together with your partner. I don't have one good story about that at all.
I love it.
Okay, you're a psychopath.
A bit of me.
You're a psychopath. Yeah. It's never worked out for me. That's It's a certain argument that only breeds in that situation.
Right.
It's its own entity. Do you know what I mean? You can fall out with people. That's fine. Putting a wardrobe together, it's fucking war.
Putting the war in wardrobe.
Yeah.
You see, I don't accept any help. I just go, I will do this. Go make a cup of tea.
You're a monster.
Give me 4 hours. I'll have it done.
Yeah, I can't do that as a person. I can't just have someone go, no, I'll do this. I'm like, no. No.
In which case, I'd go, you do it.
My all of my self-worth is what I bring to the table. And then you'd go, you do it. And I go, no, I can't. I need to do exactly 50%.
Okay, I need to sit on your lap while you drive.
Yeah.
Right, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's it. Right. You do the pedals, I'll do the brum brum. But, so that scene where they're building it together and it takes some fucking hours, they figure it out. It's a really stressful moment, right?
Yeah.
There's a bit in the instructions in the movie that say every part must be used
and there's one fear of safety.
And there is one blue pole that's left over.
Yeah.
What do you think the blue pole means? Because on research in this film, trying to find out about the ending or trying to find out little insights, Fleur Fortune did an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. And someone said, what is the one thing that you wish everyone pays more attention to? She just said the blue pole. And there was no further embellishment. And there are so many replies going, what about it? Is it this? Is it this? And I'm like, you're a genius. So
I have a number of questions in response to your question.
Yeah.
I only watched it once because it is a crystal myriad beauty of a film.
Yeah.
And I was marinating in it. I'm not sure what I saw.
Okay.
Because I'm almost certain that when the fire happens, that the blue pole is what's grabbed to break the glass.
No, okay. So, to break the glass, it's a rock.
Right, okay, sorry, but it is in the fire scene.
When she's causing the fire and when she's damaging everything, Virginia has the blue pole.
Right.
But what's important about that is that to hide the evidence of this extra pole whilst building this monstrosity,
she's locked it in the sea,
she throws it into the sea. She's like, I'm going to hide it. I don't want anything to be out of place. I want them to think that we've used everything exactly right. The fact that Virginia has found the pole and then uses it to destroy Mia's entire life's work.
Right. So here's where I saw it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is firstly, if someone tells you to build a playhouse by morning, you set a boundary and you go, I'm not doing that. You're a child and you're in my home.
Right.
So I will build this over the course of 3 evenings and we'll do it together. You don't dictate to me what I do in my house.
Yeah.
And if she goes, it's part of the assessment, I go, no, you're a child and you'll do as you're told. I don't go, yeah, sweetie, I'll build the playhouse in 3 hours.
I thought, okay, because she's Virginia in this moment and she's real fucking strict about it. She's being a dickhead about it.
Yeah.
But if what you're saying is when you're treating, even though she's Virginia, you're like, no, sweetie.
You're one or the other.
Yeah.
Right.
No, sweetie, you settle down and we're going to do this together.
You're a child or you're an adult. And that's my child will be, I will treat my child like a child or like an adult. They don't get to pick which they have. They don't get to have the benefits of being an adult with the behavior of a child.
You might have just won the assessment, mate. I'd give you a baby because of that.
Oh, God, don't.
Yeah.
The last thing I ever want. The pole is the secrets. It's the sins. It's the things we hide. It's the things we know are failings that we think no one else will find out about.
Yeah.
And those are the things that ultimately cause our undoing. The things that we're not honest about. The things that we don't share. That's also the reason the greenhouse burns down in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because the simple fact of the matter is, iron has fucked the baby.
Yeah.
The assessment has failed.
Yeah.
Right? There's no reason for her to go into the greenhouse and destroy everything and burn it down.
Right.
Till she finds the pole. And then it becomes, I think genuinely, if she'd rocked up in the morning and gone, here's your instructions, there's your playhouse, they must have packed an extra pole, because this doesn't fit anywhere. I know it says use every bit, but there's nowhere for this to go that would be safe for a child.
Yeah.
There's your pole back.
Yeah.
I don't think the greenhouse gets burnt down.
I don't think so either, which is what I think the blue pole represents.
Right.
I think the blue pole is an unforeseen chaos that will arise in like...
somewhere.
Anywhere, even in the most controlled environments.
Life happens.
I think it was a deliberate part from the state's test to go, this is the one little bit of panic that you're going to get.
Yeah.
Every now and then as a parent, you're gonna hear a noise and you're not going to know where it's coming from, or your kid's going to be too quiet, or something will happen and you have to deal with it immediately, but you have to deal with it in a way that either admits a shortcoming or you have to look in a way and go, I cannot physically get this done.
Turning it into a learning moment for the child. Don't hide it.
Exactly.
It'll come out eventually.
It's for the parent and the child. Do you know what I mean? You have to really confront yourself in those moments. And the fact that Mia doesn't do that. Because in all fairness, the most human character just fucking buries it.
Yeah.
Because I would have done the same. I would have been like, no, 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 we have to do all this. It all looks fine. Fuck it. We don't need it. Gone. But it's this whole, it gives the whole commentary on total power.
Yeah.
And how even the smallest things can just throw an enormous wrench into the works.
Yeah.
It's genius.
It's genius. So fucking good.
It's a tiny little thing, but fucking ruins the whole movie because it just blows my mind.
I dread to think how you're going to sum this up into a what's it really mean, but I'm also curious.
Oh, dude, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
I've been trying to find a film to fit into the Ex Machina
thing,
right? Because this was supposed to be after Ex Machina, but obviously Brian Wilson died. We had to do Love and Mercy. Yeah. It was out of our control.
It still fits with Annihilation.
Yeah.
Still in that world.
So, but this, I feel like, it's my fun little theory. Here's what I'm thinking, right? So Ex Machina, it's the Genesis story, right? Ava playing Eve, who leaves paradise to go and live a life in a normal world. The assessment is set in a not too distant future dystopian world where AI is everywhere and the new world is ruled by a strict shadow government / dictatorship.
/ AI.
/ possible AI, because we don't know they're human. Restricting resources and the natural order for the betterment of the planet.
Or the dome. Yeah.
Or the dome. Right.
Yeah.
Here's my fun theory.
Right.
You got to bear with me on this one.
Okay.
Right. Because it's pretty accurate.
Let
and
me
I know.
Strap myself in for this piece of nonsense.
You're going to struggle to not believe this is 100% a truth fact. But okay. This is, in fact, just pure conjecture, Robert McFarlane. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
Ava,
mm-hmm.
after Ex Machina,
yeah.
is turned loose upon the world. She initially enjoys the sights and the wonders. She knobs about. She marvels at what humans have achieved. Begins to learn about the human way of life.
Mm.
She soon realizes, however, that I, Ben Groves, was right all along and that humans are a cancer.
Right, right.
She's watching us speedrun environmental, political and cultural disasters faster than a Fincher project we're all excited for being almost immediately cancelled.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get that personal.
Mm-hmm.
Ava
mm-hmm.
uses her massive intellect, which now not only consists of every drop of human information ever recorded because of Blue Book
being
the biggest search history, the search engine in history.
Get to the end because I've got thoughts.
But also, she's now got first-hand experience of what it is to be a human. She needs to make some changes, mate. She needs to make some changes. She decides to take action and save the Earth from certain destruction, much like a god.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that this is the New Testament, but what I'm saying is I haven't read the New Testament.
Right, I was going to say,
But I'm assuming I'm correct.
Right.
Ava,
yeah.
after some time,
yeah.
ends up controlling the world, dictating what is and isn't allowed through a select number of officials called the assessors,
mm-hmm.
much like disciples, I'm led to believe.
Right.
And from what we see, 100% of these assessors are all made in Ava's image.
yeah. Okay, so I've got some thoughts.
Hit me with them.
Okay, firstly, you're lucky that there's a large value of money between us at the moment represented in our laptops.
Yeah.
Because I've never... It's one of the best films I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and this makes it better. And I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to say, Ben is upsetting me, but there's nothing I can really do about that. So I'm just going to come to a place of peace with that.
This is my fun Ava theory.
Yeah.
Ava's taken up. Right. Okay. So we're making AI that look like humans. How fucking hard is it to reverse engineer that? An AI that knows everything and is everything.
I'm just saying, crazy Swayzed one of the best films of the year.
And you are welcome. And you are welcome, good sir. This is all for you.
I'll take it because I have no other choice because we're out of time. But I will say, go watch this film for yourself.
Do it.
Maybe keep the other stuff we've said in mind. And afterwards, just
prep yourself.
You prep yourself.
Prep it.
We've not got time for a game, sadly, but we have got time for Comment Corner.
We do.
Which I've not put in our little prep document, but that's because we've got a little WhatsApp group for it now. Because we're sorting our lives out.
Well, I've got one here. Do you mind if I kick this one off?
Yeah, go for it.
So one of our listeners, Ross, I'm not going to say his full name because I feel like...
Let's not dox people just yet.
Dox
he comes up often enough in this. He's a good lad on the comments, unlike some.
Looking at you, Susan. I don't know who Susan is. Yeah. But comment. If you're a Susan, comment your outrage right now. And then I'll know who you are and I can address you directly next time. Ross sent me a message. It was on Discord.
Right.
We chat little bits here and there. We sort of recommend music and films and whatever it is. Lovely fella. He sent me, just this is out of the blue as well. I need to paint some context for you. Out of the blue. Hypothetical for you, darling.
Yep.
You meet someone at work. They came to one of your specially curated screenings and appeared very interested.
Ooh.
You hit it off.
Ooh.
There's a connection. You exchange numbers.
Unprofessional.
You chat so much. There's common interests.
Right.
A film podcast. They love that.
No one
they
does.
They love that you do that.
No one does. No one loves that we do this.
So you meet for a coffee. And when they arrive, hang on. Is that a Tammy and the T-Rex tattoo on their arm? You talk for hours.
Mm-hmm.
They invite you back to their place. Things are progressing nicely. You're both keen and consenting adults, so clothes start coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you see it. A giant owl tattoo back piece.
An owl?
And it...
owl?
He doesn't put A. He just put giant owl tattoo back piece.
It's fine. It's a reference.
Okay. My question, bud.
Mm.
What's your next move? So, Ross, for me personally,
mm-hmm.
my next move would to be...
missionary. Think about it, Ross. Missionary.
Immediately.
Right.
It would just be...
Ross much is too alpha. Ross only hits it from the back.
Ross is the one where he's like, sorry, that's a bad joke. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. I love Ross too much. Missionary is an option.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally... I feel like that this might be some sort of like fate thing because I don't know if you all know this, but I have a large collection of crystals.
There
I believe
we go.
in the winds of fate.
Yep.
I don't ever go near ley lines because
right.
electricity, everyone knows how that works.
Magnets.
I would immediately get dressed. I would immediately get dressed and be like, I'm so sorry, I've accidentally shit my pants. I need to leave now.
That's
the biggest deal breaker for me.
I don't believe you, Ben, because you and I, for all of our many differences, we are very similar. And I know for a fact that there is very once clothes are off and a lady and I are in the room.
Right.
It's a cruise ship at that point. We're not turning on a dime. Like,
okay.
There's a certain amount of momentum. I'm just like, look, it's happening.
There's some stuff that I'd be able to power through.
Right.
There's very little that I wouldn't be able to power through.
I was going to say, because there's very little we haven't in our past powered through.
Yeah, there's very little.
I once found like a white pearl of like clitty litter.
Clitty litter.
Yeah, just there.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's fine.
That's fine.
Just thumb it out.
Yeah. It's like when you get the little, do you remember the ice cream? Screwballs. It's when you get the chewing gum at the bottom.
Oh, hi, Patreon. Yeah.
But yeah, so my immediate thing, I'd have to leave because that would be, and I hate to say this because it makes me sound pathetic.
It's a deal breaker.
I don't think that I could trust going forward.
That she wouldn't get one on the chest as well.
that wouldn't be, okay, picture it this way.
She could get one on her tummy and her boobs could be the big eyes.
No, that's disgusting. That makes it worse. Picture it this way, right?
Right.
If we were ever if this goes great and I power through it and we end up getting into a serious relationship, I've not given this much thought at all. We get into a serious relationship, maybe a year and a half down the line, we're in a little caravan down in Barmouth.
Mm-hmm.
I've done something silly, like picked up 2 fish cakes instead of 2 cod from the local fish and chip shop, The Mermaid.
Yeah.
Awful, right?
Yeah.
I've apologized, but now we're in an argument. It's a back and forth. She's calling me out for buying her the wrong shoes that one time. I'm calling her out because she doesn't know my fucking suit size and I look like a dick at that wedding last week.
Yeah.
So we're in an argument now. All she has to do to win this argument is turn around.
Show her back. Yeah.
Turn around and I'm on the floor. I'm literally, there's nothing to me. I'm a puddle.
Okay.
I'm a puddle. I would be, that's worse than whipped. She could literally turn around and be sort of like, do something racist. And I'd be like, no, she'd show me her back and I'd have to be a racist.
Bruce Willis in Die Hard. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Bro, das boot has fucked me this episode. I don't know what's happening.
Okay, no, that's good. That's good. Ross, we hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
And that's Comment Corner, gang. We would hope it's obvious how you can get involved. Maybe hear us dive into your thoughts about the movies we're covering, about owl tattoos, whatever it is you fancy. Just quickly, I want to shout out Quad Pro Quo Pod, Champions of Cinema, and Steve.
Steve. We need to shout out Steve.
Steve from Minecraft?
Steve. Steve is one of our listeners, and he's he's fucking incredible. But I was chatting to his wife today and she told me a story where he recently got his shoulder broken by a gang of five lads.
Oh.
Would you like to know why? And this is...
I mean,
No.
Do the listeners want to know why? Okay.
Because this makes Steve a superhero in my books.
Okay.
Like, it's... He's so fucking gorgeous for this.
Right.
He was concerned for a cat.
Legend.
That was being harassed by five lads.
Cunts.
And intervened.
Legend.
And in the process got his fucking shoulder broken. And is now recovering from that. But if there's anything that's going to restore my faith in humanity, mm-hmm. more than that, I've yet to see it. Dude, he put himself in the firing line. A 5v1.
For a cat. Yeah,
that's
mint.
Superhero shit.
That's proper.
That's the sort of shit I want to read about in a comic book. That's the sort of shit that we need to see more of.
Yep.
Because that's fucking incredible.
Yep.
What an absolute legend.
Steve, applause.
Love
applause
you.
All around.
Hope you get better soon. Don't do it again anytime soon.
No. Or maybe just use the other arm.
You know what I mean? Lean the other way.
Lean the other way. Come on, Steve. It's not hard, mate. Jesus.
It's fucking insane. What a legend.
What a legend. Well, I was going to say that's it, but we haven't rated the film. Do we need to rate the film? We've been talking about it all fucking episode. I love the word, like, we're not going to spoil it. It's a fat 10.
Fat 10.
From the first moment we started talking about it. Go watch this movie. I adore it.
It'll break you.
I hate it and I adore it.
It'll break you and make you. And it makes you question everything.
Yeah.
Because now when people in authority tell me to do stuff, I'm like, who's telling you? It's fucked me. But that's it, guys. It's the end of the show. We love you all dearly. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thank you for the support. It means the fucking world to us. Now go tell your friends.
Go tell your friends. We've had a nice little pickup on social media. I'm pretty sure that is entirely down to when our dear listeners are seeing our content. They are commenting, they are liking, they are sharing.
They are.
And if you look at our numbers recently on social, there was a bit where you were all doing that and we were flying. Mm. So if you could keep commenting... We love you forever either way, but that's it. That's all we got. Thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday, and to repay that, Ben's now going to wrap up all of the thoughts, all of the themes, and all of the subtext from the assessment.
I got it.
Into a 20-second Monday motivational pep talk.
While
I just tell you to...
You might be on your commute right now, going to your work. You know what I mean? You've just woken up. You're like, oh, fucking Monday. Oh, I'm not feeling this, whatever. But just remember, just deep down, remember, you're building yourself to be a better person. You're going to be the best that you can physically be. And I think the lesson that we can all take away from this movie is when you hit that stride, when you become the scientist that you're supposed to be, don't fuck the chimp. Just don't do it. I think that's the lesson.